This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Twenty-five years ago, in war-torn El Salvador, four church women were abducted, raped, and murdered. We continue our exploration into what happened and how U.S. policy in the region affected many. Ambassador White describes the politics at the time.
These small countries, whether they're right or left or center, have to function in the orbit of the United States. The disparity of power is so great that no government can really get along without coming to some accommodation of the United States. Now, Cuba has done this because of the support of the Soviet Union, the Soviet bloc. For the Central America to accomplish this would have been almost impossible. But the real point is that violent revolution is to be avoided, and the objective that U.S. foreign policy had under Jimmy Carter was to try to have a peaceful revolution. And that was taking a huge amount of effort, but I think we had achieved quite a bit towards that objective, but then President Carter was defeated and President Reagan took a diametric turn in his policy towards Central America and basically advocated the solutions of the extreme right.
The bodies of the four church women were found when a local man came forward. Ambassador White witnessed the exhumation.
Well, what I saw was four women who had been shot at point-blank range, and it was clear that they had been stripped and battered and violated. And, you know, it was very difficult because I knew the women, Sister Dorothy Cazell and Eugene Dunham, and they had spent the night in our house with my wife and me only two nights before. So that was a personal loss of great importance to me. But it was also true that it was a terrible blow that the Salvadoran military expected to get away with doing this.
Sister Dorsey.
Oh, they were piled one on top of the other. Jean, half of her lovely face was blown off, and Dorothy, who had a tranquil look on her face, and then Maura, who almost had a She had a very serene face, but it almost was like a silent cry. And then Ida, again, had very tranquil expression. And as soon as their bodies were placed, I know instinctively we all knelt down and prayed. And it was just knowing, absolutely, they were with God.
Here's Gail Fares.
And I remember when the Reagan administration was trying to, through disinformation, make it sound as though these were political activists. Maura was never a political activist.
Ambassador White.
I think I have the distinction of being the first ambassador fired by the Reagan administration. And I think that came about because I received a message from Secretary of State Alexander Haig, in effect ordering me to write a telegram to the Department of State saying that the government of El Salvador had launched a serious investigation into the deaths of the church women. And I simply refused to do that.
After reporters exposed the story of the murdered nuns, President Reagan's Secretary of State, Alexander Haig, made this statement.
I'd like to suggest to you that some of the investigations would lead one to believe that perhaps the vehicle that the nuns were riding in may have tried to run a roadblock or may have accidentally been perceived to have been doing so, and there have been an exchange of fire, and then perhaps those who inflicted the casualties sought to cover it up.
The deaths of the churchwomen did not end the war. It took tens of thousands of lives, and the high-profiled killing of the six Jesuit priests, their housekeeper, and her daughter, to bring the government and the opposition to sign a peace treaty. For 7 years, Dominican Father Jim Barnett was pastor in a community of 10,000 displaced people. He left in 1989, after the six Jesuit priests, their housekeeper, and her daughter were killed.
I left El Salvador not of my own volition. November 11th, 1989, I was awakened in the morning, and there's a lot of commotion outside. I went outside. There were these young people with black suits carrying M16 rifles, and they said that they had taken over the slum area close to San Salvador, the capital. Anyway, there was fighting going on right in my neighborhood, and I was caught outside of my house and had to stay overnight with some friends. I came back the next morning to my house, and the people there told me that I had received a phone call in which they had said, "Tell Jim Barnett to get out of the country or he is dead." I took that seriously, and I went to see the Archbishop. And at the Archbishop's office that morning of November 16th, there was a guard at the door that said that the six Jesuits and the two women had been killed last night. It appears there were a number of places or threats that had been given that night. So eventually, what I saw was some photos then that a photographer friend had taken of those bodies, and they literally blew their brains out from a close range, used an M16 rifle, as though to kill the ideas of these Jesuit priests who were the authors of the revolution. And eventually I had to leave the country because of that death threat, because it simply wasn't, I couldn't do my work. I went kind of underground for a while, but then saw that I might be, if it was a valid death threat, it would be because I might endanger some of the people that I was around. We were suspect. We were not political at all. We were not involved in subversive things. But the government just went on that classist assumption of they can't figure these, they wouldn't do these things themselves. After I had to leave in 1989, there were three Salvadorans, and at the time there were two foreigners who were arrested from my house. And the Salvadorans were kept and tortured and severely treated. They let the two other foreigners were there was one Spaniard and one from the United States, whom you happen to know, maybe Scott Wright. He was living at my house at the time, and he was arrested, and but then released because he was a foreigner, but deported or told he had to get out of the country by the official government. But those Salvadorans, they were tortured, were treated really bad. The woman was held upside down, like tied her feet and her head to the bound, and held there, and then, like, you know, all of her blood rushing to her head and her face, and then they would come over and slap her, and she was just in. Anyway, it was because of their connection with us. It was because of our house, because somehow we were suspect. We were not political at all. We were not involved in subversive things. But the government just went on that assumption, as again, as I say, a classist assumption of they can't figure these, they wouldn't do these things themselves. Well, the U.S., immediately we had that whole idea of, in the 70s, of being opposed to anything that might turn into a revolution, because of what Castro did in Cuba, and then what the Sandinistas did in Nicaragua. So everybody, any kind of even organized group, was immediately labeled as communist. So in those days, the United States government would be absolutely opposed to anything which might be against the governments which we were supporting, which were friendly economically and politically to the United States, and whose oligarchy. There was a famous thing of a handful of families in El Salvador that controlled everything. Well, it wasn't completely true, but there was a certain amount of truth in it. Super wealthy people that would own all kinds of, not just the land, but everything connected with it, the whole of the economy being run by these handful of families. The United States was, they were friends. They were all those kinds of people. Folks were educated in the United States, went into politics. And so the United States wanted them to maintain. The United States was not interested in democracy or in human rights. It simply, we weren't. We were interested in countries, regimes that would take up our policy and be anti-communist, which meant anti-socialist, which meant anti-poor, or anything that would smack of some kind of organization against the status quo. And the government forces would come into a town and they would literally kill everything in sight. This woman said she heard a young soldier say, "We have to kill the children and the animals. The children will grow up to be communists." So they massacred village after village. The United States was not interested in democracy or in human rights. We weren't. We were interested in countries, regimes that would take up our policy and be anti-communist, which meant anti-socialist, which meant anti-poor, or anything that would smack of some kind of organization against the status quo.
Here's Gail Fairs.
In the United States, people weren't able to identify with El Salvador, but when they killed Maura and Ida and Jean and Dorothy, people began to say, something's wrong with this picture. Why is our government supporting people who are raping and killing nuns? And it really brought thousands of people into the movement. People began to then pay attention to El Salvador.
To acknowledge the 25th anniversary of the deaths of the four churchwomen, Orbis Books has published two fascinating books. The first is Here I Am, Lord, The Letters and Writings of Ida Ford, edited by Jean Evans. It includes the many letters Ida Ford wrote to her family and friends and fellow sisters. Here's an excerpt of Ida Ford's last letter to her mother, written one day before she disappeared. Dear Mom, I guess we're into celebrating life, birth, birthdays, and my own grudging acknowledgement that I'm still alive for some reason. So here's to the three generations of Fords thankful for the gift of life. Much love, Ida. Salvador Witness, The Life and Calling of Jean Donovan, is written by Anna Carrigan, who made the documentary film Roses in December. The book was also published by Orbis Books and can be purchased at bookstores or by going to www.orbisbooks.com. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Sister Madeline Dorsey, Ambassador Robert White, Gail Fairs, Sister Jean Fallon, Father Jim Barnett, and Francisco Flores are just some of the voices of our world. And I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Our website is www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. Please go to www.voicesofourworld.org. To learn more about Mary Knoll or try Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.